Hydraulic fracturing, or fracking, has been a controversial topic in neighboring West Virginia, as well as in Pennsylvania, New York, and other states. And with potentially untapped oil and gas resources stretching beneath portions of the Bluegrass State, the controversy could be coming to Kentucky. On this week's Eastern Standard, we ask the question, is fracking coming to Kentucky? We're going to learn about hydraulic fracturing, and we're interested in hearing from you with your questions, comments, or personal stories. You can write to us by email right now at wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Post a comment on the WEKU Facebook page or send a tweet at WEKUEST. In just a little while, we'll open the phones as well. We have experts on both sides of this topic of hydraulic fracturing or fracking. We're interested in hearing from you. It's time for Eastern Standard, right after the latest news from NPR. From the studios of WEKU on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University, it is time for Eastern Standard. Hello, I'm John Hingsbergen. In the eastern part of the Commonwealth, it is speculated that large untapped reserves of gas and oil remain beneath the ground, but it remains to be seen how productive those reserves can be. A test well has been drilled in Lawrence County, but due to the nature of the permits required to drill there, those results have not yet been released. In tapping those reserves, the practice of hydraulic fracturing, fracture simulation, or fracking could be employed. Actually, fracture stimulation, I'm told. But how much do we know about fracking? What are the economic benefits, the environmental questions? How will Kentuckians be impacted? Should fracking be extended in Kentucky? We have guests with us to tackle those questions, and we will meet them in just a few moments. But first, earlier this month, Kentucky Public Radio's Erica Peterson reported on the possibility of gas and oil production coming to the Rogersville Shale, a formation that lies underneath much of eastern Kentucky. Industry excitement around the project, as well as the potential toll on human health and the environment. Erica Peterson.
The Rogersville Shale is a Cambrian-age formation that lies under much of eastern Kentucky and extends into West Virginia. Two test wells have already been drilled. But Dave Harris of the Kentucky Geological Survey says because the operators have drilled the wells under a special provision called a stratigraphic test permit, the results are confidential.
It is a potentially productive formation. We just don't know how prolific this formation might be.
But increased activity by land agents in several eastern Kentucky counties suggests that the oil and gas industry thinks Rogersville could be very profitable. Jim Sheff is the director of forest preservation nonprofit Kentucky Heartwood, and a volunteer with a new citizen group called Frack Free Foothills. He says he's worried about the growing body of evidence suggesting that fracking has a negative effect on both human health and the environment.
Increased fatalities, increased illnesses, increased birth defects, contaminated groundwater, contaminated surface water, lower property values, all of those things come to a community when somebody chooses to allow to lease their minerals.
If oil and gas companies begin tapping the Rogersville Shale, it'll be the first time large-scale hydraulic fracking happens in Kentucky. For Kentucky Public Radio, I'm Erica Peterson.
In a few minutes, we will meet Jim Sheff, whose voice you heard during that story by Erica Peterson. But let's begin our program with Brandon Nuttall. Brandon is a geologist with the Kentucky Geological Survey based at the University of Kentucky and has tracked oil and gas drilling activity across the state for 36 years. Brandon, first of all, some facts in that story we just heard. Is the Rogersville Shale still likely to be I forget exactly how Erica said it, but it sounded like we were not already doing hydraulic fracturing in Kentucky.
John, thank you very much. I'm glad to be here. I'd like to say first that fracking has actually been used in Kentucky since the 1960s for recovering oil and gas, mostly in eastern Kentucky, a good bit in western Kentucky. And actually, before then, wells were explosively fractured. So the question of is fracking coming to Kentucky is kind of moot. What we need to do is we need to make sure that it is done safely and in an environmentally responsible fashion.
So what's the issue with Rogersville, folks such as Jim Sheff opposing the introduction of fracking at that point?
Well, the Rogersville itself is kind of a new idea. There was some oil and gas development in Elliott County, and in doing a study at the Kentucky Geological Survey, we were trying to figure out, well, why is the oil and gas there? And in that study, we identified the Rogersville as a potential source for the oil and gas. And that was based on a well that was drilled in Wayne County, West Virginia. Well, a company, now known as Bruin, became interested in what was found in that well and started looking at it as not just a source of oil and gas, but a potential reservoir. And they eventually drilled the well in Lawrence County, and we know that they tested the well. We know that the well was fracked, and this well has generated a lot of interest. Basically, in that area, the Rogersville is going to be as much as 9,000 to 10,000 feet deep. By the time you get over into the central Kentucky Madison County area, however, it's going to be much shallower, and the wells that we have available in that area, Madison, Jackson, Estill, Rockcastle counties, those wells suggest that the organic-rich part of the Rogersville is just not going to be present.
But at that 9,000 to 10,000 feet deep, you're saying a mile and a half.
Yes.
Almost 2 miles into
yes.
the ground on our way to China is where this is oil and gas?
Potentially. They're looking at it as what's called a liquids play. In other words, it would be very light hydrocarbons, including natural gas. This, however, is very speculative, and actually at the current price of natural gas and crude oil, it's the economics of drilling and completing a, well, it's 10,000 feet deep that has a half mile to a mile or more lateral, that's very expensive.
Well, let's back up and talk about the whole process. And again, as we've mentioned and noted, hydraulic fracturing has been controversial in northern West Virginia, in portions of Pennsylvania, in New York. The Marcellus shale area received a lot of attention in the last number of years. And we've got, I guess, this Rogersville shale area is getting similar attention and concern from environmentalists and homeowners and so forth. What's involved? What are we talking about when we discuss fracking as a way of acquiring gas and oil?
Well, first of all, you have to drill the well. And for example, here in Kentucky, as one of the permitting requirements, you must install steel pipe called casing in the well to protect fresh water in compliance not only with state regulations, but with the Safe Drinking Water Act. That casing is actually sealed into the well by installing cement. The drilling then goes on in a curved section. If we're talking about horizontal wells, the curved section will land in the target formation and then extend out through the target formation. At that time,
so you've got a pocket of gas or oil down there. You're drilling down, getting a pipe essentially into where that stuff is, where the fuel is.
You're getting an open pipe into that rock material. Now, you know, one of the big misconceptions is that we're not drilling into tanks. Rocks have a property called porosity, and that's a measure of the void space in the rock. And that's where the oil and natural gas are actually stored. And in one of the big problems, one of the reasons you need to frack is because the porosity and the ability of oil and gas to flow through things like shale is very, very limited.
So fracking, that's why the term fracking, you're fracturing the shale by the process that you use to release the gas and oil?
Yes, you're inducing fractures in the rock, and basically what happens is a special tool that has devices that seal the tool against the walls of the drilled well that separate individual ports, little valves that open up, is installed in the well. Then each of these ports is opened in sequence. You may have heard of stages of fracking. They open these ports. They will pump fluid through the port. The pressure of the fluid will exceed the mechanical strength of the rock, and it will cause a fracture to be initiated. Once that fracture is initiated, very often they'll mix sand at the surface, pump that. That will go into that fracture that's initiated so that when you release the pressure and are able to actually produce the oil and gas, that fracture is propped open.
So the fluid going down there, is that just water?
In most cases in Kentucky, it is water that has some sand in it. It's usually 98% to 99% water. The sand, it can be as much in Kentucky is maybe 1% to 2%. Chemicals are added. They're very often detergents. Some of them are one of the popular ones. When you read about it, you'll see that there's something called a slick water frack, and an additive is put in the water that makes it easier to pump the water at pressures at the surface. And it turns out that this slick water additive is a chemical called polyacrylamide. And polyacrylamide is a chemical that is used for water treatment facilities. And this is one of the things that is used. The oil and gas industry is sensitive to criticism about using toxic, and they have been experimenting with and using less toxic materials.
Okay, we want to keep it as simple as we possibly can here. We've got a geologist here. We've got a scientist, folks. So I'll do my best to try to make this as simple as we can. We're talking fracking in Kentucky and the possibility of extending hydraulic fracturing to the Rogersville Shale area. So let me see if I get it back. If I get it right, then maybe some listeners will have picked this up. You drill a well where you know there's a deposit or there's the availability of some gas and oil, and that could be 9,000-10,000 feet down in the ground. And then from another location nearby, you're introducing right near that, you're introducing hydraulic fluid, water that you're forcing in there that's going to break up the shale that'll release the gas, the oil that can then be pumped out through the well.
No, it all comes from the vertical hole that you originally
it's
drilled.
It's one hole. It's the same hole.
It's all one single hole. You just use special equipment to turn it so it goes horizontal.
Water goes down.
Water goes
gas
down.
Gas and oil comes back up that same hole.
Goes back. Well, actually, the water also flows back to the surface where it's recovered
and
treated. What's,
and the environmentalists are concerned about what? What happens with that water when it comes back?
That's one of the big concerns, exactly what happens to it when it comes back.
And is, from your point of view, and we've got 1 minute before we need to take a short break here, as a scientist, is there danger involved in this? Is this, how safe is this process?
Well, you are dealing with chemicals. And there's always the potential for well failure. There's always the potential for spills, things like that. But these are the things that can be handled through regulation. It's a process. We're learning from it. Like I say, we've got 40, 50 years or more experience with it. So we're using green completions in Kentucky, as they're called.
We're going to meet opponents of this process of hydraulic fracturing to drill for oil and gas in Kentucky. We're going to meet the representative of the oil and gas industry in just a few moments as well. This is Eastern Standard. Send us an email, weku.easternstandard@gmail.com. You can tweet at WEKUEST, post on Facebook, or go ahead and pick up the phone and call 800-621-8890. Fracking in Kentucky on Eastern Standard. This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. We're talking about hydraulic fracturing, fracking in Kentucky. Already underway, we're told, for 50, 60 some years as a method of retrieving, I guess, oil and gas from under the earth. And there's a proposal underway. There are some plans, I guess, being worked out to do some fracking in the Rogersville Shale area in the eastern portion of Kentucky. We're discussing that topic on this morning's program, and you're welcome to get on board in our conversation. Send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com, or call 800-621-8890. Let me introduce two more guests to our conversation. Jim Scheff is Executive Director of Kentucky Heartwood. In addition to his involvement in the organization Frack Free Foothills, we heard from Jim in a story from Erica Peterson of Kentucky Public Radio earlier in the program. Jim, thank you for being with us this morning.
Thank you.
And also with us now is Bill Barr, former president with the Kentucky Oil and Gas Association, current chairman of its Government Affairs Committee. Bill is also managing partner of Black Ridge Resource Partners. And Bill, thank you so much for being with us.
It's good to be here.
Let me turn briefly to Bill. I know Jim has got a lot to say, but Bill, from the oil and gas industry point of view, what's new about this whole approach of Rogersville Shale? What does it promise, and what is the interest of the oil and gas industry at this point?
Well, John, just a little introductory to start. The Kentucky oil and gas industry has been active in the state of Kentucky for over 100 years. The association, of course, has been active for just a little less than that. We have a multitude of members, over 200 oil and gas producers and associated vendors. We contribute over $1 billion annually to the economic and contribute to the Kentucky economy over $1 billion, over 3,200 jobs, averaging $75,000 per job. So we generate about $40 million in revenue to the state in the form of severance and income tax to state and local government. It's clear that oil and gas production isn't new to Kentucky. As Brandon indicated, fracking has been going on for 50 or 60 years within the state. A direct answer to your question, what's happening, what may happen in the state of Kentucky, is the size and magnitude of the fracks increase. The science itself is an evolving science, as is the science related to drilling of oil and gas wells. We're now, as you heard, drilling horizontally. After we get to depth of sometimes 10,000 feet, we're able to drill as much as a mile or more, a mile and a half, 2 miles, in horizontally in laterals.
And in terms of the scope of the industry, $1 billion to the economy right now, is this going to increase? How much is this going to increase the impact on the state of Kentucky?
Well, we certainly have no way of being able to address that because the Rogersville Shale is in its infant stages. But we shouldn't just talk about the Rogersville Shale. There are other exciting things going on in the state of Kentucky. In the same area, in Lawrence and Elliott counties, there is a play that over 120 wells have been drilled in a relatively shallow 1,200 to 1,700 foot below the surface called the Berea Sandstone. And those wells are being drilled horizontally using new technology and being hydraulically fractured.
Very briefly, comparison to the coal industry. The coal industry is in a decline in Kentucky. It has been a major source of revenue and for the state as well as to overall economy of Kentucky. Where does the oil and gas industry compare to the coal industry?
Well, clearly the oil and gas industry has not thrown off the revenue on the level of the coal industry. Coal industry, over the years, their severance tax and income tax revenues delivered to the state and local governments are in a magnitude of three or four times what the oil and gas industry has been able to do. We're both longstanding natural resource extraction industries. Obviously, natural gas is more favored environmentally at this point. In fact, I think it's important to note that the shale revolution, which started in Texas in the Barnett Shale, pioneered by George Mitchell, has resulted in, for the first time since the 70s, production moving upward. In fact, we are now at an all-time 40-year high in oil production and an all-time high in natural gas production.
Okay. Very, very interesting perspective. Bill Barr with the Kentucky Oil and Gas Association, chairman of its Government Affairs Committee. Jim Scheff, you are coincidentally from Berea.
And
we just had the mention of the Berea sandstone. And, of course, we're talking the Rogersville Shale. You're involved with Kentucky Heartwood and frack-free foothills. Why do you not want fracking?
Well, first of all, I'd like to respond to three things that were just said that we hear a lot, and then I'd like to bring up several issues about the state of the science on this. The first is the statement that this is nothing new, that we've been fracking in Kentucky for a long time. You hear that a lot. On the other hand, you hear the industry talking about this new renaissance in shale oil and gas development that has factually caused an increase of hundreds of thousands of these wells across the country. So on one end, they're telling investors and others, we've made these incredible technological advances in our techniques and how we approach things that have allowed us to extract oil and gas in ways never before. And then on the other end, they say, it's the same thing that we've always done, which is not true. Another statement that was made is that it's mostly just water that goes into these wells. It is about 98.5-99% water that gets injected into these wells. But in the deep fracks, like in the Marcellus Shale and what we'd probably see here, you're talking usually, I think it's fair to say, a 4 or 5 million gallons of fluid go in for each well, and you might have several wells per frack pad. About 1% is about 50,000 gallons of chemicals. And while Mr. Nuttall said some of these chemicals are not hazardous, some of them are, like benzene and other chemicals that we know cause cancer. In large volumes, 1% may not sound like much, but when you're talking about 5 million gallons of fluid per wellhead, it's a large volume of hazardous chemicals that we're dealing with, both in terms of injecting into the ground and also storing on people's properties through what these leases allow.
Is there a history of problems in other sites where hydraulic fracturing has gone on?
Yes, yes. You know, 2 years ago, the industry could say that there's not a lot of proof because it was a new technique, a new industry. And over the last year and a half, the science has really caught up. In the beginning of 2014, there were more studies published on the health and environmental impacts of fracking than all of 2011 and 2012 combined. I've read reviews of scientific papers, reports, investigative journalism based on state statistics, all from 2014, more than 100 of these that all show tremendous problems. On the economic issues that Mr. Barr mentioned, economic analyses looking at other states like Pennsylvania, Arkansas, Texas, have found just in terms of the damage caused to roads by this heavy industry, the severance taxes are not the cost of the damage to the roads is more than the severance taxes the states receive. And so I don't know if Mr. Barr has driven the narrow, windy two-lane roads going through Rockcastle County and rural Madison County. Those roads can barely handle the traffic that we've got now. Who's going to pay for that? It's not going to be the oil and gas industry. It's going to be taxpayers that are paying for that. But I want to get to the science. You know, as I said a few years ago, it takes a while for good science to catch up. And there's a lot of good published science out there now, especially over the last 18 months. And there's science showing increases in birth defects, increases in illnesses like skin rashes and nosebleeds, large measurable amounts of gases like benzene and toluene around gas sites, and even in properties adjacent to the gas sites. So schools, churches, neighbors are being exposed to toxic and cancer-causing chemicals at levels that far exceed levels set by the EPA to protect people from cancer and other things like that. There's documented wells having collapsed and been polluted. And then there's the issue of this wastewater that comes out. You know, like I said, most of the volume is water, but when it comes back out, it's saturated with brine, hydrocarbons, benzene, toluene, all sorts of other stuff. And that fluid, millions and millions and millions of gallons, gets trucked around. It gets stored in open pit lagoons that leak. There's a large history of leaks all over the country. There's documents of leaks going on almost every single day. In addition to explosions and blowouts and other emergencies that are well documented, in Ohio, in June, there was the Statoil explosion, which you might be aware of. That explosion blew up an entire frack pad, blew up all the chemical totes of fracking chemicals, hydrochloric acid. It blew up the generators. It also caused a fire that destroyed the building that housed the list of the chemicals. So the first responders that came to respond to this huge explosion and fire didn't even know what chemicals were burning. There was another well blowout just before Christmas in Ohio. It was a blowout of natural gas that caused a huge evacuation. It took them 10 days to cap it. The companies paid to evacuate the families, but they had to move those people 45 minutes away because you talk about jobs coming. Well, all the local motels were filled with out-of-state workers, okay. And so they had to move people far away to be able to find somewhere to put them.
Jim Scheff, a lot of information. Obviously, you have strong feelings about keeping the expansion of fracking from happening in Kentucky. This is Eastern Standard. We're talking about fracking in the Commonwealth. 800-621-8890, our phone number. Jim Scheff is going to be here for just the next 9 minutes or so, so we'll try to get a caller or two on the air before he leaves, and we'll be bringing back Brandon Nuttall, geologist. But we also have with us Bill Barr, former president of the Kentucky Oil and Gas Association and the chair of its Government Affairs Committee. Bill, your reactions to Jim's comments.
Jim has brought up much of the rhetoric that we hear around the country. The issue that he has brought forth without citation is that there are hundreds of studies showing that fracking is causing health problems, when in fact the science has shown that that's not the case. In fact, the President Obama, Secretary of the Interior, just within the last month has indicated that fracking is acceptable. Beyond that, it's difficult to debate a moving target and a ghost, if you will. Clearly, water issues and traffic on small county roads, and Jim, to your question, I'm very familiar with Eastern Kentucky. I've personally been involved in over 1,200 wells in Eastern Kentucky. And brought a lot of wealth to a lot of landowners who were very satisfied to have wells drilled on their property. My partner was born and raised in Jackson County. His wife is from Rockcastle County, so we know the area well. More importantly, the science shows, as Brandon and the KGS has just indicated, it is unlikely that there will be large-scale development in any of the counties that you've mentioned. As we move forward with the debate, I would like to address the issue about false statements that fracking is new. Fracking isn't new. The technology is the use of a liquid under pressure to cause fractures in a formation. Equipment has evolved. Horsepower is more available. Larger formations are being fracked, and much more of it in terms of the length of the horizontal lateral. The first horizontal well wasn't drilled in the state of Kentucky till 1985 or so. But the technology of hydrofracturing a rock formation isn't new. It has evolved in terms of, in response to horizontal drilling.
We're hearing from listeners who are not in favor of the expansion of hydraulic fracturing in Kentucky. You're welcome to get on board. I'd be interested in hearing from a homeowner or someone who has been involved and has a positive story and happy with the fact that you're making some money off of the process. This is what happens, Bill Barr, when the industry comes, when they go to someone's home to use their property, the homeowner is going to make money off the deal?
Absolutely. Transaction is a one steeped in history. The landowner, only in the United States, is their private ownership of minerals, generally speaking. And so here, government doesn't reap the reward of exploration and production of oil and gas. The landowners do. Landowners are paid on the front end a advance royalty for signing a lease. They're then paid a royalty of 12.5% to 15% of the proceeds from the well, and they're paid for any damage or use of their surface.
Okay. Let me get Jim Scheff in. We've got a few minutes more with Jim, and we will get to the phones as well at 800-621-8890.
Well, one of the things I'd like to say is it's just not correct to be able to say the science doesn't back up the statements I've made. It's not conjecture. There are a lot of studies on both sides, of course. But I am a scientist also. I've read the studies. I've read reports. I know how to tell the difference between conjecture and a good study. And as I said, the last year and a half, there's been a lot of material that's come out. If folks are interested, I suggest you get on our website, www.frackfreefoothills.net, and we've got some good links there. There's nothing that I've said that is not backed up by authoritative information. The other thing, well, there's a lot of aspects here. But the bottom line is this is industrial development in rural areas. There are tremendous risks. Studies show increases in rent, increases in crime, increases in traffic fatalities, tremendous risks to people. And while some people may make money, that is true. The fact is that people's choices to allow this development on their property affects everyone in their community. The benzene, the toluene, these gases, the smog that's been found happen. There's an area in Utah that had some of the cleanest air in the country, and now there's a study that showed the amount of smog and ozone is equivalent to that of downtown Los Angeles.
Let's go to Lisa from Lexington. Get her on the air before we need to say goodbye to Jim Scheff. Lisa, you are on the air. Thanks for calling Eastern Standard. Go right ahead with your comment got about a minute for you.
Hi there. So first I want to say that I am a professor of sociology. I'm a doctorate, just got my doctorate. I'm currently not teaching, but I will say this. As a social scientist, it's 100% true that anytime you have a contingent workforce coming into a town and setting up like these frackers will be doing, social changes happen. Rates of crime go up, rates, domestic violence, a lot of negative social things happen. That's one point. The second point is, yes, Kentucky has been doing fracturing. It's primarily been nitrogen fracking. Hydrogen or hydraulic fracturing with water is a new thing. It's a whole new ballgame. It's a lot of water. And especially when you think of all the droughts and stuff that are happening and how water is going to be more precious than oil in the years to come, it is vital, vital, vital that we protect our water supplies. They are using millions and millions of gallons of water to create these, fissures that are going to release the nitrogen or that are going to release the gases. The problem with that is that it has been linked to earthquakes. Geological studies have been showing this is happening. Speaker there was saying, the studies, the science, it's not rhetoric, it's the science that's showing that it is impacting health impacts.
Lisa, thank you.
It's making people have cancer and all of these negative things. So,
Very good.
Of course, the petroleum industry is going to say these things are not problematic.
All right. We want to talk about the regulation of the industry as well. And actually, Jim Scheff, Bill Barr, in the 30 seconds before the next station break, do we have regulation in place right now?
Poor regulation.
The industry believes that regulations are in place, but they are being looked at and reviewed for enhancement.
Okay. Jim Scheff, thank you so much for being
thank
with
you.
Us. Jim is with he's the executive director of Kentucky Heartwood and involved with the Frack Free Foothills. We're going to meet Tom Fitzgerald, environmental lawyer, in just a few moments. This is Eastern Standard, 800-621-8890. This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. We're talking about hydraulic fracturing in Kentucky. It's a method of acquiring oil and gas trapped beneath the earth. And it's been highly controversial in West Virginia, in Pennsylvania, in Ohio. I guess it was controversial in Texas when it started, and then it's been controversial in many places. And we're talking about the potential expansion of that process in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. You're welcome to be part of our conversation. WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com is our email address. You can give us a call at 800-621-8890 or post your comments on the WEKU website or the Facebook page. All of the comments may not make it on the air, but if you post on one of these sites, they'll be there for others to see and to interact with. We're going to introduce Tom Fitzgerald in just a quick moment. Tom is the environmental lawyer and environmental lawyer and has been the director of the Kentucky Resources Council since 1982. Let's at least acknowledge Tom. Thanks for being with us on the line. Are you there, Tom? Hello, Tom Fitzgerald.
Hey.
Hey, thanks for being with us for this morning's program.
Absolutely. Great program.
We're going to get back to you in just a quick moment, but Bill Barr wanted to follow up on that comment about the issue of regulation of the oil and gas industry and processes. Like, I'm sure, you know, this is where things change, the regulations need to change. So do we have processes to cover or regulations that cover the process of fracking?
Thank you, John. Certainly, to follow up on Jim Scheff's comment that there were very poor regulations, the Kentucky oil and gas industry has been regulated very appropriately by the Cabinet and the Division of Oil and Gas. To that end, last spring, the Cabinet Secretary, Lynn Peters, formed a work group, which we refer to as the DNR work group, a group of members of his Cabinet staff, members of the oil and gas industry, members of the Chamber of Commerce, members of Farm Bureau. Tom Fitzgerald serves on that work group, along with another environmental lawyer, Reggie Van Stockton. I also am on that group, and we've worked since July in a series of about 15 meetings reviewing the deep well statutes and reviewing other statutes in response to the ever-evolving nature of change within our industry. We hope and expect that changes in the regulatory and statutory scheme will come from that work group. And the industry has worked hand in hand with the Cabinet and others to increase and better the nature of this regulatory scheme in Kentucky.
Tom Fitzgerald, environmental lawyer and director of the Kentucky Resources Council since 1982. What do you have to say about the regulatory environment in Kentucky related to fracking?
Well, first of all, this is a great show, and I appreciate being able to be part of it. I think that that both of your guests have a point. There have been regulations in place for many years. The regulations were first really spurred by the recognition by oil-producing states that in the absence of regulation, there was a lot of waste occurring. Both of the resource in terms of properties that were affected. And so you have requirements regarding the drilling of wells, there's pre-drilling activity, there's spacing requirements that are intended to conserve the oil and gas resource. It's really kind of ironic that water is actually looked at as being a pollutant, but the result is the same. You're trying to isolate the producing zones from contact with surface and groundwater. There are certainly gaps in the regulation, and Bill is absolutely right. We have been working in what I think is a very positive, very collaborative way to try to address some of those gaps. And I don't want to get into too much detail because the work of the work group has now been presented to the Cabinet Secretary for his review, and once it is reviewed, then it will be, you know, a public document concerning some of the revisions that are being proposed in order to strengthen the regulation. There certainly are some gaps and some weaknesses, and as Bill was alluding to, it is a very different management issue when you're looking at nitrogen-based foam fracks that have been done in Kentucky since about 1975, I think. Brandon could correct me if I'm wrong. We had some experience with high-volume hydrofracking, but it was quickly discovered that the clays in the Kentucky shales didn't react well to the water. They tended to expand and cut off the production instead of enabling it. So what you're looking at in Kentucky, historically at least, currently, is nitrogen-based foam fracks that use maybe several thousand gallons of water rather than 3 to 5 million gallons of water. So I think one of your callers made that point, water resource protection and water scarcity is certainly an issue.
Tom, Joe, on this issue of regulation, are we talking about changes in regulation that would be essentially administrative regulations that are done within the executive branch of state government, or are we talking about potential legislation? Is there any legislation out there? Yeah, I was just wondering if there's anything before the legislature during this current session this year.
Hopefully, yes. I think that is the goal, is to get some statutory changes that are, in fact, agreed upon through the process. There are also discussion of regulatory changes under the existing authority that the agency has. Just for example, and this is an issue that I think is very important to your listeners, currently, if there is a severed surface and mineral, right, there's been a deed of severance that separates the surface estate from the oil and gas, then that landowner is entitled to have their land reclaimed. There's a reclamation plan requirement, and they are entitled to have any damage compensated for. If I lease the oil and gas minerals, there is absolutely nothing outside of anything I might negotiate in a lease that assures that the property will be reclaimed. There is no statutory responsibility in Kentucky currently, and that's one of the areas that the work group has been looking at. So administratively there's a need, and this is something that's not been worked on yet, but there's a real need to strengthen the administrative compliance and enforcement components of state law. But there are regulations in place. There are new challenges that are certainly regulatory as well as technical challenges that are created, and social and economic challenges, as one of your listeners, callers indicated, by the advent of high-volume hydraulic fracturing in order to stimulate production from these tight shale and other formations.
Okay, I want to get another listener involved in the conversation. Let's go to Jimmy. Apparently not. Jimmy from Hazard was on the line, but may not be. We need to clear that line so we don't hear that sound anymore. Jimmy's comment, he said he was from the natural gas industry, and his experience talking to landowners is good. He's happy to have a good paying job. Actually, we do have someone else responded on the WEKU webpage related to the high paying jobs. This person said the oil and gas guy needs to be called on the carpet. He says these jobs average $76,000 a year. Average wages is why we have the expression lies, damn lies, and statistics. I challenge him to instead tell us what the median income is. Say a company comes to town with 10 new jobs with average wages of $100,000 a year. Trouble is 9 of them are paid $20,000 and one is paid $820,000, of which an average wage is $100,000 a year. Realistically, the average workers in the oil and gas industry, Bill Barr, how much are they actually able to make?
Actually, let's start at the bottom. Landmen are currently making $400 a day.
Landmen
are making $400 a day.
What are landmen? They're just people
landmen
doing
are
surveying.
Lease agents.
Oh, okay, they're the ones going door to door.
Going door to door are making $400. By the way, plus per diem, plus expenses.
Where can I sign up?
There's a company that Jim can give you the business card for. There are others that are paid. Welders are paid high wages, as are pipe fitters, as are drillers. As our mechanics. I mean, the idea that one executive salary skews the average to that number is ludicrous. That number is well documented, and we can provide documentation on it.
All right, let's see if we can get Tim from Harlan on the line. Tim, are you there?
Yes.
All right, Tim, go right ahead with your question or your comment.
Well, first of all, I want to say thank you for having me on the show. And the information that I'm asking about, I actually heard from NPR. I always listen to the public radio channel because it seems like you get so much more information. I heard about fracking 6-7 months before it was in the local popular media. As I understand it, there was a company, it's supposed to be one of the major companies doing fracking in the United States, that is an Australian-based company, and if I remember correctly, they were barred from doing fracking in Australia because of problems that they had had due to slippage of the fault lines and problems like that. I'm not 100% sure on that, but I'm pretty sure I did hear that on the radio, and I think that these kind of safety concerns are kind of getting a short shift in our scramble to get this kind of oil.
None of our guests here seems to be familiar with this Australian company, so it is something we should research.
The other thing was about the New York. If I understand it correctly, New York State recently passed a ban against fracking in, I think, the whole state of New York. And I'm just finding it kind of interesting that a state like that is able to pass that ban so quickly, where a state like Kentucky is kind of like the industrial open market for the United States.
Okay,
like.
Tim, that's very, you raise a very, very important point, and we're going to get Bill Barr to talk about New York. Potentially, did they ban fracking in New York?
The state of New York is in the process, after multiple years of study, not quickly, multiple years of study, in issuing a statewide moratorium. What's interesting about that, John and Tim, the question brought up a great point. The city of New York, after decades of having some of the worst air in the country, announced last year that they have the cleanest air quality in the city of New York in 50 years. They also, coincidentally, in 2013, had lower energy costs than New Orleans and the state of Louisiana. Why is that? It's because of the abundance of natural gas coming from the Marcellus Shale in Pennsylvania. So think a minute about the oddity of a state reaping the benefits of using natural gas that they banned from production in their state.
Okay. Jim Schaff is still with us, Executive Director of Kentucky Heartwood.
Yeah, a couple points. One is, of course, there will be jobs. What we've seen in other states is a large portion of those jobs are going to people from out of state, and bringing in large numbers of people from out of state and giving them good salaries is one of the things that drives harms the local economy, drives rent up, and creates all sorts of other, as that caller mentioned, other sociological problems. Another thing that the last commenter mentioned was about earthquakes, and we haven't really gotten to talk about that. And it's alarming, it's fascinating, but it's not usually the explosions from the fracking, but the injections that have been found to cause the slippage. And it's now confirmed, it's not conjecture. When they looked at Oklahoma, the state went from an average of about two earthquakes above magnitude 3 annually to several hundred a year. And the United States Geological Survey, not some left-wing rag, has definitively connected several earthquakes over magnitude 5.0 that have caused damage to homes, property, and caused injury to injection wells from fracking.
And Jim Schaff, let's swing the microphone back over to Brandon Nuttall, a geologist with the Kentucky Geological Survey. Earthquakes as a result of fracking.
Okay, first off, yes, the USGS did do studies. There's a huge problem here in that we're conflating fracking with underground disposal of wastewater. And in terms of fracking, millions of wells have been fracked across North America, and there's potentially only a few dozen instances of what they call induced seismicity. We can't say, it's in a way, it's very much like what has happened in New York. New York essentially banned fracking because they said you can't guarantee that there will not ever be any public health impacts. Well, I can't say there will not ever be an induced earthquake related to fracking. I can say that based on the volumes and based on the energy, that it's not likely that there's ever going to be what's called a felt event. In fact, very small events are one of the ways that they actually monitor exactly where the fractures are going underground when you induce them.
Just a few minutes remaining in our program this morning. Folks, including Tom Fitzgerald, who's on the phone line here, isn't this debate, isn't this issue about fracking all about our need to diversify the sources of energy to maintain our lifestyle in this country? We have coal, we've got oil and gas, and we've got traditional oil wells down in Kentucky and the Gulf of Mexico and wherever else. Now we're talking about oil and gas as a result of the shale drilling and the fracking process. Is that what this debate is all about, Bill Barr?
To some degree, John, it is. And as the country continues to grow and as we evolve, and this is all about evolution of not just our industry, but evolution of U.S. society, the lack of a good, solid energy policy on the federal level drives much of this debate. let's look for a minute at a president who pushes natural gas as a bridge to the future, takes credit in his 2013 State of the Union speech for the phenomenal growth of natural gas, and then a year later attempts to throw natural gas under the bus. Then in this year's State of the Union address, takes credit for the phenomenal increase in oil and gas production, all of which has been on private property. On federal lands, natural gas production is down significantly.
Politics going to be an issue no matter what. Where are we going to go for energy, Jim Scheff and Tom Fitzgerald?
Well, I'll let you go, Fitz.
there are a number of important points that have been brought out. One of them that I think we need to underscore is that no energy source is without its footprint. Coal, oil, even renewables, hydro, solar, wind, all have technical issues regarding impacts and important issues regarding siting, regarding development and responsible development. But if we are going to grapple with climate issues, which is the predominant environmental issue and I think economic and energy issue facing this nation and this world this century, we are going to have to wean ourselves from dependence on fossil fuels.
Okay, well, let me get Jim Scheff in for just 20 seconds because we need to wrap up the program.
Yeah, we need to be looking at genuine renewables and large-scale conservation. And in terms of talking about climate issues, they're continually revising up the amount of methane that's escaping as fugitive emissions throughout the entire natural gas infrastructure. That are saying that natural gas may be almost as bad as coal in terms of greenhouse gas producing emissions unless it gets under control. The other things, when we're talking about American energy security, this is an industry that exports our energy, exports natural gas, along with the coal industry exporting coal to whoever will pay the most. And so if we're talking about U.S. energy security, we need to ask the Oil and Gas Association to stop mining, putting the impacts on us, and sending our oil and gas overseas to other countries.
All right, Jim Scheff, thank you for being with us. Brandon Nuttall with the Kentucky Geological Survey has been with us. Bill Barr with the Kentucky Oil and Gas Association. And Tom Fitzgerald, environmental lawyer and with the Kentucky Resources Council. This is Eastern Standard. This program will be available as a podcast online later this afternoon. Thanks to Richard Turner, who produced this week's program. Our associate producers are Richard Turner and Logan Riley. Technical Director Brian Bartlett on the phones. It's been Julie Tennell. I'm John Hingsberg, and thanks for being with us for Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations.